This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. We're here at the RNIB Tech Fair Northern Ireland. And we're here with Robert. Now, we've got an incredible display in front of us of some wonderful heritage items. It's a great opportunity for people to get hands-on and get to grips with some pieces of history, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So, they've asked me to come along with a load of heritage items. So, fundamentally, what our display here is demonstrating is RNIB's connection with the development of Braille and the adoption of Braille in Britain and also other countries as well that we convinced to go with it. And also examples of the some of the other competing raised formats that were being used in the 19th century.
We're celebrating 200 years of Braille. What are some of these standout items that you have on the desk with us today?
Well, we have the original writing frames that were used by Thomas Rhodes Armitage, who was the founder of RNIB. It wasn't called RNIB back in then, in 1868, but we have his original frames that he used before he learnt Braille himself. There's a Hughes typograph, which is dates back to the middle of the 19th century. And then we have his original Braille slate, which his daughter Alice donated to us after his death. And then really going through the ages, we have different competing systems, different interpretations of how to make Braille work in practice. We have some original old slates when it had to be done by hand. It's terribly cumbersome if you look at these things, with some rather nasty lead little figures and that you had to imprint through the paper. We have basic machines that automated this process. There's a simplex typewriter here, which is from 1895. This is a British invention. It looks like it was knocked up in someone's shed, and if we can still press it, it makes a rather nice tactile noise. Made, it looks like, by sort of bent steel and probably tin, and it probably doesn't look like it would last terribly long when you compare it to something like a Perkins Brailer, which are still used today, which weighs a ton, of course. And then over here we have American versions of different machines which are a lot heavier. There's a Hammond Braille typewriter from 1895. So this was a conventional typewriter that was adapted for use by Braille. And we also have a New York type Kleidograph from 1894. Now this machine actually was a competing system to Braille. And this was what the Americans wanted to use during what was called the War of the Dots, which was the end of the 19th century going to early 20th century. And we, in fact, the organisation that became National Institute of Blind People, actually convinced the Americans to go with Braille instead, amazingly, but by through advocacy and persuasion over a number of years, which is very instrumental in the way that Braille has been adopted in this country and other English-speaking language countries as well. And you could argue it's very important for Braille worldwide as well.
For Braillists today, people who are used to using modern technology, how would they manage with all of these items? Is it something that you could pick one up and be able to use straight away?
I think we've had quite a lot of people in here today who've asked various questions about these machines, and we've had a lot of Braillists who have come in, both people who've learnt Braille at a very young age and people who have learnt it in later life. And they can all grasp immediately how these things work, because fundamentally Braille is Braille. It's just a matter of which buttons to press on these machines. And we've had people come in who actually remember using many of these machines themselves at various stages during their lives, depending on their ages, obviously. There are some examples here of machines that are still used today, and fundamentally the design hasn't changed for a very long time. I'm looking at the moment at a Stainsby machine. This was designed back in the 1880s. And really, you know, somebody could use this today. People also use it, call it a crab brailer. But they would pick this up very simply, as long as you knew which buttons to press, quite frankly. And that's quite a simple process. The real tough thing is about learning Braille and learning which characters to code. Once you've learned that, I think actually using these is relatively simple.
Have people been surprised over across the other side of the room? We've got things like the Monarch on display. Are people who've maybe tried that one and come across to you surprised at just how far things have come in the last 200 years?
I think so, yes. I mean, we were at an event yesterday called Braille and Beyond in Lisbon Library, and there were a lot of people there speaking very passionately about Braille, and a lot of people expressed amazement that that Braille had actually survived, and nobody realised when Louis Braille came up at it, you know, with it about the age of 15 or so, that it was going to last in this way. And the thing about these machines is they're very accessible, they're very hands-on, so it's great to have all the alternatives, obviously. And the thing about Braille is that you can still use it in parallel with lots of modern technology as well. It's not one or the other. We were at a launch event for the Braille and Beyond tour back in the British Library last year, and Lord Blunkett was there, and he particularly said that we shouldn't look at something like Braille as an alternative in itself, as sort of, you know, it's not black or white. You can use all of these things together. It complements other ways of expression. And totally. People have accepted it and looked at it and see it very much as an ongoing concern, I would say.
And how do we make sure that we make it to the Braille 300 celebrations?
Well, we have to remember to still keep teaching Braille. I mean, there are a certain number of people who read Braille, but there's a reduced number of people who actually can write in Braille. And I think to keep it as a sort of, if you like, a living language, you have to remember that it was designed not just to be a passive way of reading, but also as a way of creating information yourself. And that's something which is great about it. Perhaps, you know, in alternative to something like audio, which is more of a passive listening thing, great for talking books, but if you want to actually write a note or something, you can create it yourself. So you have to remember to actually teach how to construct Braille things and learn the various different ways of contracting Braille into shorter versions of itself. Just keep the message going. I mean, we are finding at these events that we're going to that the people who use Braille are extremely passionate about it and feel it's very important that it keeps being taught, particularly people who have risen to the top of their various professions or have reached some kind of seniority within organisations would absolutely say that Braille is essential to them.
Accessible technology for the last 200 years.
Absolutely.
Here at the RNIB Tech Fair in Northern Ireland. Thanks so much for your time and thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're so welcome.